Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Sponsored by Virgin Mobile. We'll tell you when your phone is paid off. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
You are in for a treat if you've just tuned in because...
Warning.
The following item is not recommended for little ears.
Because it's time for a dose of sex therapy with Rachel Cook.
As always, lads, a little ears warning here, especially this week. But don't worry, you can catch this chat on our podcast after the show. And this week, Rachel will be answering one question that keeps coming in from listeners. How can you tell if you're bad in bed? What does it mean to be bad in bed? Our sex and relationship therapist, Rachel Cook, joins me in studio. Rachel, good morning.
Morning, Jen. Great to see you.
It's great to see you. So we might start with an email we received earlier in the week. It's fairly lengthy, but let's get to it. It says, hi, Rachel and Jen. Have you covered being bad in bed before? I'm a male, been with my partner for 3 years. And to put it simply, I don't think I've ever made her climax. There's been a couple of occasions where she insists she did, but I'm not so sure. Anytime I try and talk to her about it, she shuts down. She hates talking about sex. I'm finding more often than not now, when we're having sex, it ends when I climax and she seems to be okay with that. These days, we hurry through foreplay, get to the main event, and it's over very quickly. I really want to make our sex life more equal. I want to please her, but I fret that maybe she just doesn't think I have it in me. Full disclosure, I've only ever had one sexual partner before, so I feel I may lack experience. I'd love to try new things. I'd love to have more sex, and I would love to please my partner. Please help me.
Oh, there are so many aspects to this one that I want to talk about. A lot of it has been covered in there that, you know, I think are extremely almost universal fears for people about sex. You know, just so terrified that they don't know what they're doing, that they might look stupid, that they're not pleasing their partner, that their other
partner's dissatisfied. So you would say that's a very common thing?
Really common. Okay. And a lot of different elements there. So for instance, the focus on orgasm, I would say number one, we've talked about this a million times, Jen. Mm. You know, it's not about how many times someone orgasms or whether they orgasm at all. However, that doesn't mean we should not be focused on our partner's pleasure, because some people find it very difficult to orgasm or can't at all.
Yeah.
Some people have, you know, very small orgasms. They're not particularly strong, or sometimes for some people, even orgasms can be sometimes painful or uncomfortable. So I think the focus there of that being the marker of great sex is really, really not helpful. However, you can be very focused on your partner's pleasure. And what I hear from this email is that this person and their partner just aren't talking about sex, about what they like. And, you know, it's also not about how much experience you've had. I've talked to lots of people who've had many, many one-night stands now. Mm. Nothing wrong with a one-night stand. But just because you've had lots of partners doesn't mean you're great in bed. It doesn't mean that you're responsive. It doesn't mean that you're listening to the other person. It doesn't mean that you're good at communicating consent. You know, it doesn't mean
or
any of those
like,
things.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question?
Please.
On this particular email, he's taken all the responsibility for her climaxing.
Yes.
Surely her climaxing is her responsibility.
Yes. So I would say it's absolutely both. But I would say that women have been very socialized, not
okay.
just to fake orgasms. You know, it's often seen as being emasculating, or that it will damage men's ego if women don't climax, or at least pretend that they climaxed. And so women are often afraid to speak up. Also, you know, you often hear men talking about wanking, about masturbating when they're in their early to mid teens, where there's girls, women often aren't talking about masturbating with each other until they're in their, it could be mid to late 20s, if
yeah.
even that.
Yeah.
You know, I know many people, many women much older, who don't talk about masturbation at all. So there's still this social conditioning, which is there's a lot of shame around women and masturbation and women's bodies, and a lack of awareness of anatomy on the part of people of all genders, for people with vulvas especially. So that's another thing. So yes, it is her responsibility, her climax, but I would say that her education through porn, through school, whatever, through talking to other people is possibly quite low. There might also be, you know, just a lot of hang-ups and shame. It could be around having a religious upbringing, or just quite a sex-negative family, or a family just where it wasn't talked about.
Mm.
So she might not really have a clue about her own body to be able to communicate that to her partner. So, yeah, there's lots of things that those two can start to talk about.
Start to talk about. That's the biggest piece
yeah.
of advice. So communicate. communication is key. So whether you like it or not, you're going to have to talk about this.
Yeah. And, you know, you can start, if you find it too awkward to sit down and go, right, after dinner, let's talk about sex. If you've never done that before,
yeah,
start by writing in a journal on your own. You know, write some bits about what you know about your body. What do you like? Your nipples being touched or pulled or sucked? Do you like, what sort of pressure do you like on your genitals? Do you like it to be more internal? How do you feel about anal play? You know, if you haven't done that before and you don't know, write that down. You know, it's okay to say, these are the things that I know, these are the things that I don't know but don't want to know, and these are the things that I don't know but I'm sort of up for trying out. There's no shame about wherever you are, because there isn't a place to get to. It's not like you have to be a certain amount of experienced. But I think, you know, what I'm hearing from that email and from so many people is the fear that they are crap in bed, the fear that their partner is dissatisfied, and no communication's going on about that. So how can you get better then?
And asking yourself those questions, like you pointed out there. Hi, Jen. I'm so glad you're talking about this this morning. Whenever I have sex with my boyfriend, he always tries to get me on top. I actually think I'm crap on top. My rhythm is all over the place and I just can't seem to get it right. I also find it a lot of effort. Can Rachel give me some tips or tell me what I could be doing wrong? It seems to be better when he's sitting on a chair and I straddle him, but on the bed, I'm useless.
This is also a really common one.
Is it?
It is. You know what? It was a bit like when your man wrote in last week about his Mickey getting snapped off from leaning too far back.
That's right.
For people of all genders, whatever it is that's going on, you know, first of all, I would say a lot of people think when they're going on top that what you should do is be on your knees, that your knees should be on the bed. And most people, that, especially if the person that you're on top of is larger than you, you're going to feel like a flea on a bit of a mountain, and often there just isn't the space to be moving about well. So I would say get up on your flat feet first and foremost. You know, that can feel a bit weird to begin with because it can feel like you're doing squats like a frog, but it gives you a much better range of motion. You can also put your arms down on the bed. That usually is a much better for being able to move your hips around, being able to, rather than feeling like you can only rock back and forth, that you can sit up and not use your hands and go straight up and down. You can lean forward and have more of a circular motion.
Snap that Mickey off if you
snap it off.
If you want, you have the power and the control.
And practice the rhythm. Definitely practice the rhythm. So that I would say, do on your own. Do some voguing classes. Vogue dance. The duck walk is amazing for just basically being able to bounce on your heels, on your hunkers. Just get a bit of practice in. It doesn't usually take that much time, but it's very common to feel as though if you don't have that practice and you don't do much sort of like rhythmic movement, which could be in the form of dance or whatever, a lot of people really struggle with that rhythm in the way, especially people with vaginas, because they just often don't have anywhere near as much experience of that motion as people with penises, usually having more experience with that thrusting.
There we go. I hope that helps. Next one. Okay. Kissing. I hate tongues, this texter says. Oral sex feels awkward and don't look at me. Actual sex, I hate my body too much to get on top or have sex in daylight. Orgasming rarely happens. Do other people have these issues or am I just terrible at sex?
Loads of people have these issues. Body image is a really common one. You know, we've received so many messages from the media and especially from mainstream porn that all bodies pretty much should be white, very thin, no cellulite, no stretch marks, no scars. And, you know, so that the variation of shapes and sizes and also genitalia, you know, even just like I think we've talked about before, how it seems that the removal of body hair, especially like genital hair, pubic hair, became common really just because of porn, video porn, so that you could see more of what was going on. And then it kind of took off and everybody was taking off their hair. Now it's generally seen as normal, especially for women, to completely remove their pubic hair or only leave a tiny strip. And that originated, you know, some people say it feels better for sure, but it came from, you know, videoed porn. And so I think like just being aware of having the variations of, hair, shapes, sizes, colours, variations in your skin tone, cellulite. These are things that, you know, often porn performers have had a lot of work done in order to look very camera ready.
That's
not what the average person looks like. So I would say, you know, doing some work on that sort of body positivity or at very least body acceptance. You don't have to love every part of your body, but you can at least accept that, like, you know, you're grand. You're probably a
babe. That takes a lot of work, because this in the message, they mention it twice. Like, firstly, don't look at me when they go down on them. And then, you know, I hate how I look. I don't want to have sex in daylight. All that is gearing up to the body positivity.
Yeah, and lots of sexual shame. You know, it's really about the education. Most of us, now I'd say people under the age of 25, the sex education in schools is generally a good bit better, but it's still often very clinically focused. It's not very focused on sort of pleasure and really talking about consent in a way that can still be fun and sexy. You know, a lot of it seems very serious. It's about STIs. It's still this sort of idea that sex is sort of a bit wrong and dirty, but that people are kind of going to do it anyway. So you're just trying to mitigate the risks. And that's just not really, you know, that just doesn't have to be what sex is about. You know, I'm all for protection. I'm all for talking about STIs. I'm all for very explicit consent, verbal consent, but that you can still have loads of fun and loads of pleasure inside of that and just have a laugh. It doesn't, you know, you're not going to a funeral. You're there to have fun.
Yeah. I don't see Sister Margaret talking about anal play anytime soon.
No.
I don't think that's going to happen. but you can go to your parents, to your peers, to your friends and have those conversations. Someone else says, I can make myself an orgasm pretty easily on my own, but when it comes to sex with a partner, it just never seems to happen. If they're going down me, I get in my head and I feel a bit embarrassed about the amount of time it's taking, and I pity them having to keep at it for so long. Am I destined for solo only orgasms?
This happens to people of all genders with all genitalia, but women with vaginas especially.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Feeling worried that if it takes more than whatever they've decided in their head is the kind of average amount of time, which might be anything from that they see 2 minutes to maybe 5-10 minutes, that once their sort of internal chronometer, or maybe the watch on their arm or on their phone, I don't know, they can see once they get past that time, they often start to feel embarrassed, self-conscious, worried that the other person is having a terrible time, that they want to stop. And so that is not the best way to an orgasm or to just enjoyment, even if it's not an orgasm. So I would say, again, don't have to focus on it being an orgasm. But since this person has said that they can reasonably easily climax on their own, I would say having this bridge, you know, I definitely think one of the main tips I give to couples, to people having sex, partnered sex with however many people they're having sex with, is to go for mutual masturbation. Masturbate together, both masturbating yourself, but also, you know, using the other person's hand, maybe toys as well. You can learn so much about yourself and the other person and bodies in general. Obviously, every body is different, but there's going to be some things that are common. But that a lot of people are very nervous about masturbating in front of each other, that they're afraid that how they do it is weird, that they're going to make ugly faces, that their partner might think that it's too sort of complicated. And I think just normalizing that and getting used to it, it can be a really good bridge for your partners being able to understand better how to engage with your body, and also that you become more comfortable with orgasming in their presence.
Really good tip. Last one. I know you're supposed to communicate lots during sex, this person says, but when my girlfriend gives me any directions, I get really offended and I feel a bit angry with her. Is our sex life doomed? What can I do?
So this is particularly one that I hear from people with penises, from men, who it feels like an assault on their ego to some degree. And many men are aware that that's not okay and that that's not helpful, but it's still happening. So I would suggest, you know, doing some work around that. That's a great one to talk to a therapist about, to spend a bit of time unpacking, you know, how for some people it was about not having been given clear boundaries growing up. Not being used to hearing the word no and taking that at face value. For some people, there's just there can still be a lot of childhood stuff going on there around the sense of being just told no. And I think, you know, a lot of men in our society have been brought up with a kind of a sense of entitlement to some degree, not all, but certainly our society has been that way. And so it can be very painful. You know, I often think these men, as I said, they can be quite self-aware, and it is people of all genders who experience this, but that it can be just very, feel very sort of, they go to a very childlike place when they're told, like, no, I don't like that. No, I don't want that. Please do that differently. Sometimes the person is saying it in maybe an overly abrupt or snappy way. Mm-hmm. So even just talking outside of the situation about how you would best like to communicate, because it's really important that you get used to there being challenges in the bedroom. You know, during sex, nobody's body is a machine. There are always going to be times where you are impacted by being too hot, too cold, stressed. You've got too much work on and your head's full of it. You're tired. You know, you might be taking a medication, you might be pregnant and your hormones are all over the place. There are so many things that can impact sex, and, you know, that doesn't, you know, it might be nothing to do with your partner, but, you know, you still have to get used to being able to say, you know, that you can decline sex or a certain sort of movement or activity lovingly. You can say, I love you, you're hot, I love having sex with you, and I'm just feeling really bloated and I'm not in the mood right now or tonight.
A few texts have come in. I just want to go to this one. 40-year-old female, and if I never had to have sex again in my life, I'd be so happy. It's such a chore.
Mm. That person doesn't have to have sex ever again in their life if they don't want to. You know, that person hasn't given more detail about whether they're feeling obliged to because they have a consistent partner. Mm-hmm. You know, I would also look up, that one's a good one to start doing a bit of your own research and maybe with the help of a professional about what might be going on there. That person could be asexual and has always been, might have been allosexual, meaning that they like having sex and they you know, are into sex. Although I say that, some asexual people are not sex repulsed. They are quite happy to have sex and sometimes even enjoy sex. They just don't really experience sexual attraction.
Okay.
But that there might be loads of reasons why that person's saying that. Maybe they have a partner who's very insensitive and selfish in bed and really doesn't care about their needs. Maybe they're finding sex uncomfortable or painful and haven't really worked out why, or they've tried to change that and nothing has worked. Maybe they are not using lube and need a ton of lube.
Lube! She got it in there! And the last question, yeah. We're doing so well. But yeah, a lot of questions to ask yourself if you're going through that. I think the biggest one, did you used to like it before and now it's become such a chore? Mm. That would answer a lot of questions, wouldn't it? But go see a therapist and get to the bottom of it if you feel necessary. Rachel Cook, psychotherapist and mental health consultant, thank you. As always, what an amazing chat that was. I think we covered a lot there.
We
really did. And you can follow Rachel on Instagram at Rachel Jane Cook with an E on the end. And she will be back next week. So if you have a question you would like us to put to her, get in touch with the team 24/7. You can email me, jen@orty.ie. We'll be right back.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.